This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, and we are joined by Swampscott cross country coach, winter and spring coach for the track program, and WF Newhall is here with us, and the third, and welcome. Thanks for joining us.
A pleasure to be here, Bill. Nice to meet you.
You know, WF, you are a running legend here on the North Shore.
Thank you.
We're talking about your, in a moment, the 100,000 mile club that you're in here for running, over 50 years of running. But when I think of WF Newhall, I mean, I think of seeing your name every day, every week, several times in the Salem News years ago. You were there, I mean, you got to be in there more than 100,000 times in the Salem News.
Well, Salem Heritage Days, the 10K, was one of my favorite races. There weren't a lot of road races around at the time, especially locally. But Salem Heritage Days was there. It was a 10K. That was a sweet spot for me. And I look forward to that every August. Always had a good feel. Bill Rogers had run it. Ron Delaney, Olympic gold medalist from Ireland, had won it. Bruce Bickford, number one in the world for 10,000 meters, had won it. So you had a lot of names, big names that had been there, competed, and won that race. And, you know, that was a win you'd like to have. But I look forward to that every August because, for me, that was kind of a check-in on where was my fitness level coming out of the summer and heading into the fall, into the cross-country season. And so I remember running it as a high schooler and winning it in the schoolboy division. And, you know, having been second, third, sixth, whatever, I knew it was a matter of time. People thought I was cocky, but I knew it was a matter of time before I won the thing. And it was always fun to trade elbows with Brian Reinhold, legend out of Beverly, national 6 mile champion for Brandeis Division III, tough competitor. And, you know, we'd line up every August and beat the crap out of each other and see who was going to get to the finish line first. So that was a big one. And Cape Ann 25K, run around the Cape was a big one too. And then the Dory Run later, which I'd started in Swampscott, was around. But that was,
you know, now I'm looking in the Salem News. I see road races this time of year, different places. You know, it's crazy, you know.
Yeah, quite a few road races out there. The numbers are staggering, which is great. You know, as a former physical educator, you love to see people off the couch and being active. But it's funny, my cross-country coach, my high school coach, Dr. John Nolan, he taught Latin here at Swampscott High, just last week I got something in the mail from him, and it was a clipping from 1983 talking about the Dory Run. And I think it was our sixth year, and I talk about having 500 runners in that race, which was huge. Now that's like, you know, most races. I mean, you look at the race Thanksgiving Day, right, in Salem, you know, they'll have 1,000 plus. So the road racing scene is very different than it used to be in the old days.
Well, so let me get to this 100,000-mile club. So tell me about this piece, and how did this all happen, this kind of piece?
I would say first that the 100,000-mile club, if you think about it, it's really a byproduct of the training and being a competitive runner, competitive athlete. Certainly not something I don't think anybody ever sets out to do or thinks about. So I was probably on a run, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, running with Jimmy Green, another local legend, third place Boston Marathon finisher, I want to say, in maybe 162, ran the Pan Am Games. But anyway, Jimmy's a legend. And Jimmy and I were running along the trails at Marblehead. And, you know, you have a lot of free time as a runner. Been running for over 50 years, and you just random thoughts pop in your head. And I was just kind of thinking, at the time, I'd never really figured out, you know, how far have I run, you know, since I started. And so I just started to crunch some numbers. And this is like going 6, 7 years ago. I go, well, definitely been around the world a couple of times. You know, that's 25,000 miles. So then recently I was starting to tally up the numbers, and I was thinking I wanted to zero in on 15,000 runs. I figured 15,000 runs at 5 miles a run gets you to about 75,000 miles. So that's 3 times around the globe. So that just kind of gets the wheels turning. I said, you know what? After thinking about that and starting to, like, chart it out, like, how many runs I had, all estimates. But, again, I think they're fair estimates in my mind and probably lowball estimates. I said I wasn't really being fair to myself because there were probably 5 or 6 years where as a competitive runner, you're running twice a day. you know, usually 5 in the morning and 10 in the afternoon, 15 miles a day. You're doing about 115, 105 miles a week for 5 or 6 years. So that's like an extra, that's like an extra year doing doubles. So I retallied the number. I said, you know what? I've probably been on over 16,000 runs. So as of today, which is January 6th, I'm estimating that I've run 16,108 times, 16,108 runs, okay? So then if you multiply that times, I think, I want to say 6.1, which I think is probably a fair number for a run, that gets you over 100,000 miles. So, again, it was never anything you set out to do. It was just kind of a random thought, like, geez, how many times have I been around? You know, first, how many miles is it around the globe? Oh, it's 25,000. How many times have I done that? 4 times. Probably not going to get to the 5th. But again, it's a byproduct of running for and training for 50 years.
But WF, if you go around the globe, you have to swim some of that, don't you?
That's a valid point. I'm a terrible swimmer, but what you can do, I've got some injured athletes right now, and they're using aqua joggers.
Okay.
So maybe you could aqua jog.
But, you know, so the 100,000 miles, 50 years, I mean, it sounds like a Toyota warranty or something like that. But tell me about that, the website, or the, you know, they keep track of that around the country and people?
So here's what happened. So I was thinking to myself, all right, you know what, you've covered 100,000 miles. I have some patches for the kids that I give out in the summertime if they do the training, 300-mile club, 400-mile club, so on and so forth. I said, you know what, maybe I'll get 100,000 miles patch for my sweatshirt, just as a little pat on the back to myself, you know. So I went on, you know, so I was on, you know, went to whatever, some search engine looking for 100,000-mile patch. Didn't really find a lot of great choices, and I bumped into Amby Burfoot's 100,000-mile runner website, strictly by accident. And I said, you know, I said, I'm going to write it up, and I'm going to send it into Amby. And at least it'll be a digital record of that accomplishment. At least it'll be someplace. Again, not, what's a friend of mine like to say, casual brag. What's his term? Anyway, that's how I bumped into it, strictly by accident. And so Amby has this thing out there, and he has some other blogs that people must have, you know, bumped into.
Yeah.
And they have their story, and then they submit it. There's a couple guys that have done over 200,000 miles, which is mind-boggling. Casual brag, I think that's the term that my friend Pete Sheridan likes to use, casual brag. So anyway, that's how I stumbled on Amby's website. But interesting, though, in conversing with Amby, his dad went to Springfield College, where I went to school as an undergrad, and was roommates with my college cross-country coach for a little while, Vern Cox. So the running community is a very small community.
But you cover a lot of ground. Small, but you're covering a lot of ground, I guess.
To say the least.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure I watched you at one of those Salem races years ago.
I missed that race. Yeah.
And, you know, and I was kidding earlier about you being named in the Salem News all these years, and you were dropping these names, and all of a sudden I'm remembering this thing where the Salem News and Bill Kaporis back years ago was the sports editor.
Yeah,
I think one of the biggest names that would appear in the Salem News, you know, so often would be Bobby Carpenter, the hockey player.
Yeah.
And I think you're right there. I think you're right there, to be honest with you.
Well, that's great company to be in. And, you know, that's the other thing. Because, I mean, in cross country and track, you know, there's not a lot of press.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of press. And, you know, we didn't have the internet. You didn't have the coverage. But where that race was in Salem and you had the Salem News, you know, there might be a picture. We used to call it getting ink. You know,
yeah.
you'd get some good ink. And, you know, it was encouraging. But I said that was always a great field. And I looked forward to that race every August, keyed on it. You know, to a certain extent, you were training through the summer, not really getting ready for anything. It was all about being ready for cross country, indoor and outdoor track. But I missed that race, you know, because I think one of their claims to fame was they were the first 10,000-meter road race in the country, because everything at the time was kind of early on, was 6 miles. There wasn't a 10,000-meter road race.
Yeah.
And they remember seeing on, like, an old application back in the day when Jock Semple was the race director. You know, and Jock was the race director for the Boston Marathon for many years. So that race had a lot of history and heritage, no pun intended.
You know what story just comes to mind here? Because there is that era, I think it was John Smidelli was in Salem. And I'm not beating him up, but he's a hardworking...
You're not going to talk about the wrong
yes,
turn.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, the wrong turn thing. So were you involved with that?
I won that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
So here's the guy that's driving the lead vehicle in the race, at the Salem race, and he goes the wrong way. So this is great. Tell me about that.
Well, a couple of things came out of that. So, I mean, like I said, I think I...
You didn't go the wrong way, I take it.
I followed the lead van. Okay. So there's a couple of iterations to the Salem race. I'll give you the quick history, my history with Salem Heritage Days. So I ran the first one, would have been in 1974. Okay, so that would have been the end of my sophomore year in high school. And I'm just kind of getting into the whole running community thing. And, you know, so I'd go up to Linwood's for the races up there on Wednesday nights, and there'd be, like, road race applications around.
Yeah.
So I said, this thing for Heritage Days, 10,000 meters, fine, I do it. Jock Semple's there. I see him poke a guy in the neck because the guy's trying to get his results, and Jock's not done, and Jock was a fiery Scotsman, you know. So anyway, and you'd get the results at the Armory in Salem, and you finished on the Salem Common. Okay, which was fun. That was the traditional course. And they had that for a couple of years, and then they went to a thing where one year they moved it down to Pickering Wharf, and it finished down there. Okay, they changed the name from Salem Heritage Days one year to the Bigfoot One, which I thought was ridiculous. And anyway, so that was the year... So the wrong turn was not Heritage Days.
Okay.
Okay? Because when I won Heritage Days, I beat Brian Reinhold. That would have been the summer of 79. I was going into my senior year in college. I'd had a fantastic summer of training with Mark Ernst, another legend out of Swampscott High School. God rest his soul. And I beat Reinhold pretty good there. And that was a legitimate 10,000 meters. I don't think that was the wrong turn race, and some of it's fuzzy. There was another big race where a couple guys came in, Ron Galluli and, I can't remember his name. It'll come to me. Came up from Rhode Island, two studs. And I was super fit, and this was the one where the year before, Bill Rogers had come as a guest and decided to run because there was a trip to Bermuda. So he was just going to be like an honorary guest and just whatever, and he jumps in and wins the race. So I would go the next year. And that was the year that the guy took the wrong turn, okay, and the course ended up short. But that was not Heritage Days. Okay. That would have been similar course, but a different name. I think it was just it would have been like a Pickering Wharf 10K.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay? But that poor guy, they lambasted him.
Oh, I know.
Or I have them confused in the year I beat Reinhold. But I think we ran a full 10K that year.
Yeah.
But the Heritage Days 10K was short because I ran like 28:55 or whatever. But anyway, that was for me, it was a non-event. You know, I kind of knew where the finish line was, and all of a sudden we were there a little bit sooner. The mistake he made, I believe, is we went down Canal Street instead of through up by St. Anne's Church. What's that? In Salem.
I'm not sure.
Anyway, that was the difference. Good. That was the difference.
All right, so take me through this just a little bit here. So we got all these years of running.
A lot of races.
So just give me an example, maybe, you don't, not decade by decade, but just when you were running your peak, if you will, what was your week like, if you will? And then maybe also just update our listeners here. I know you're not running as much as you used to,
right,
but maybe just tell us, you know, what you're doing now.
Yeah.
So there you go. So start back at the beginning.
Yep. Okay. So I'll try to give you the quick story. The story that I like to tell and like to share with kids, whether they're interested or not, is so my track career started in seventh grade. All right. Seventh grade, the Alice Shaw Junior High School in Swampscott. I ran the mile. Virtually did no training. I think my training was that if I ran 2 miles, that a mile would seem pretty easy. I wish I remembered who the coach was for the junior high school team. I don't. Anyway, the interesting thing is, so I run the mile. We had three meets. I remember one was in Saugus. I do not, and I remember one in Swampscott. I don't remember the middle one. What's interesting to me is I came in last in every mile, okay? And the last home meet in Swampscott, I was running against a classmate of mine, Billy Popio, good friend, classmate, future captain with me on the indoor track team. But Billy was a sprinter, 200 meters, 100 meters. I'm supposed to be a distance runner. This is seventh grade. I go, oh, great, Popio's in the mile. Maybe I won't come in last. Anyway, with about 200 meters to go, 220, Popio's catching me. Long story short, outsprints me. So I come in last all three of my races. Fast forward to ninth grade. Did not do anything in eighth grade. Fast forward to ninth grade. We're getting ready for a class trip up to the presidential range for like 4 or 5 days. It's like a thing for ninth graders. And there was a girl that I was attracted to. And to get us ready, they had us walking and jogging around the back of the junior high school, just around the field. So I thought I could get her attention if I kept going by her over and over again, which I did. Now, Charlie Kimball, who was the cross-country coach, somebody brought this to his attention. He came down and said, you should run cross-country. I didn't. Fast forward to sophomore year here. We were a three-year high school at the time. I hear cross-country. My dad had mentioned it. I said, maybe I'll give it a try. But I had some friends that were on the cross-country team. If you scratch any distance runner, you're going to find a basketball player underneath, a frustrated basketball player. So they played basketball after cross-country practice. So I went out for cross-country to play basketball after practice. I was first JV, then I moved up to varsity, and then every week I got better and better. I progressed, okay? Did not come in last. I got the bug. I went out for indoor track. Coach Ronnie Cochran, God rest his soul. Yeah. I was given a trophy, most improved. I'm almost crying thinking about it. And that hooked me. Yeah. That hooked me right then and there. So I was now a track guy, cross-country guy, distance runner. And I started to learn, found out about magazines, books, whatever, went from there and progressed. Junior high, as a junior, broke 10 minutes for 2 miles. That was a big barrier. Then by senior year, I'm one of the top guys in the state. Alberto Salazar, I don't know if you remember him, was my class. So he was the top guy. So the top three were myself, Alberto, this kid Randy Dreary out of Weston, and myself. We'd be the top three.
Okay.
I was eighth in the state in cross country. There was a couple kids in Salem, Matt Thompson. You might remember Matt, John Hogan. They were state champs after I'd graduated. Dave Dunsky was their coach, who was another legend.
Yes.
So I'm into it big now, and off to Springfield College, and I'm into it, and I'm probably running maybe 70 miles a week, like 10 miles a day. And once you hit 70 miles a week, if you want to get to the next level, you got to start doing doubles. So I started adding doubles. And freshman year was a learning year. I had mono in the fall. I had a relapse in the spring. So freshman year was pretty much a bust. And then I got healthy over the summer and came back and started training. And I would be running most of the 5 mile cross country races at 5 minute mile pace or better. And the same for the 5K and the 10K outdoors. The big thing for me that happened as a freshman that was monumental was we had a kid who was back, Steve Musaitis. He was an All-American for 10,000 meters. I always thought the term All-American was very cool, an interesting distinction.
Yeah.
That's something I wanted badly. And I figured if I beat an All-American, I could be an All-American. So that was my North Star.
Yeah.
That's what motivated me. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be an All-American in the worst way. And I'm happy to get this story down. It's out there a little bit. So I beat Musaitis, and I have a good sophomore year, junior year. I go to nationals 3 times in track. The timing doesn't work out, whether it's injury, just tired from the season, whatever, denied. Fast forward, we get to my senior year. I'm at nationals, 10,000 meters. That's my event. The interesting thing, we're Division II. The interesting thing for nationals is first you have to qualify, so you have to get there. All-American used to be top 8 for some reason, my senior year, they go, we're going to go top six. Okay? So I got to be in the top six. I'm fit as a fiddle. I'm on the starting line. I don't have any excuses. And there was one point in the race when some guys went, and I said to myself, all right, if you're going to be an All-American, you're going to have to go with that group. I ended up fifth. I ran 29.50. For me, that was a high point. Probably, I consider it probably the highest point of my 50-year racing career. I was an All-American. That's really what I wanted, just to have that distinction. Yeah. So Bill Kaporos could put it in the paper when he talked about me. All right? And so then, you know, the next thing is, all right, you're 29.50. That's good. Not great. You're a good regional runner. You know, you're a good regional runner. You're good on the Division II level. You're not, you know, you'd be okay as a Division I guy. You go to the Division I cross-country nationals, maybe you're in the top 100. Okay, you go to Division I track nationals, you're not even gonna qualify. Okay, and in running, you know where you stand. You are what you are by your number. That's what we love about it. It's not a subjective thing. So you kind of know where you stand. But as an athlete, you say, all right, I'm here, 29.50. Can I get to the next level? After being an All-American, I really was hoping to maybe make a cross-country team and get a USA uniform. I went out to Colorado State, as we talked about. I trained with John Sinclair, national champion, legitimate, real deal, All-American, Division I, great guy. And trained with him and a bunch of guys, the Maniacs, out in Fort Collins for about a year, year and a half, trying to get to that next level. And I improved, but I didn't get to where I'd hoped to be, you know. But I remember reading Frank Shorter's biography. You wanted to be able to look back and not have to say, what if? And I can look back and say, you know what, if I'd done that, I was very fortunate that I could train and work a little bit, but put almost everything into it. So that kind of ran its course. I ran a 219 marathon in Dublin. That's another great story for another day. How that whole thing transpired. As I mentioned, I went through the whole Masters thing. I was a Masters All-American. 1,500, mile, 3,000 meters, 5,000 meters, 10,000 meters. I exhausted that thing as motivation. That took me through about age 45, okay, to probably 49. And, you know, I've just always loved running and moving. And that's what gets me out the door. At this point, I'm probably running anywhere from 3 to 6 miles, mainly three. A long run would be 6 miles. That'd take me about an hour. And I'm racing every now and then. But it's just a gift to be able to go out every day. I went out today. I bumped into a friend of mine. It's 38 and rain. I tell the kids that's about as bad as it gets. 38, 37 in rain. That's about as bad as it gets. And I did my little 5K run this morning, and I couldn't have been happier. I couldn't have been happier. It's a gift. So one of the things I talk about with the kids is I hope I can help them develop an appreciation for running. That's all. Because that can get you through some tough times. It's easy, it's inexpensive, you can do it anywhere. It's a great mood elevator. It helps you in so many ways, physically and mentally, that it's just, if they can do some of it, you know, that's fantastic. So, that's it.
So, let me just, I want to update you. Tell me how you got into the high school, into high school coaching, when that happened. Yep. And I know you're, as we mentioned right at the beginning, winter track, spring track, and, of course, cross country in the fall.
I'm glad you bring that up because I'm very grateful. So after I'd retired.
Guys are fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
After I'd retired, I wanted to get back into teaching, substitute teaching and coaching. And so I knew Joe Tenney, who's the girls' coach here, and he coached cross country. And it was like right about this time of year. It was just the end of indoor track, the beginning of spring track, and I was kind of a free agent. And I came back and I said, Joe, can I help you out, you know, with whatever? And so I just started working with the team. And to this day, I'm extremely grateful to Joe Tenney, Brian Kirkland, and Coach Peter Bush. Those are the three coaches. That they welcomed me back and I was able to, you know, contribute and hopefully add some value. So that's kind of how it happened.
Yeah. I love your story about the very beginning. You could run 2 miles and you figured if it was a 1 mile race, probably be okay.
Yeah.
And this is where you've come all this way.
Pretty much, I'd like to say, you know, I had excellent coaches. They might not have been the most knowledgeable at the time, which is fine. But as I've talked about with other friends of mine, you know what? They never ruined it for us. They never turned us off. So a lot of it was educating yourself, talking to people, reading. You know, Runner's World was very different than it is today. You know, you could get books and magazines and things, and that's kind of where it went.
You know, the other thing too, WF, is I never would have thought your beginning running story that you told me at the middle school was that story. I would have thought, okay, you were growing up, you saw distance runners, you were going to be a distance runner. It didn't happen that way. That's to me is remarkable that's the story.
It was an accident. And I tell kids, you don't know what you have until you start to train. And then if you have some talent, it will manifest itself. Look at Bill Rogers, okay? Bill Rogers trained with Ambie Burfoot at Wesleyan, okay? Bill Rogers' big thing in college was he wanted to run a sub-9-minute 2-mile, which he did, and then he quit. And then he became a smoker and a drinker and this, that, and the other thing, okay? And then he was, like, kind of working as a conscientious objector and started running again. And started adding some mileage, and all of a sudden started to improve. And then, boom, he finishes third at the World Cross Country Championships. And he wins Boston, like, you know, a month later in 1975 or 74, whatever it was. And, you know, so he had this talent that had never really been developed. And then once he started to train with Squires and some other guys at Greater Boston, all of a sudden it's like, bam. So you don't know. You don't know who's walking the hallways. They don't know what ability they may or may not have, you know? So, but once you start to train and you train wisely, whatever's there will eventually manifest itself. Maybe you were a swimmer. Maybe you were a soccer player.
Yeah.
You know? You don't know.
And finally, I'm not to recap this whole interview, but I also love the Most Improved Player Award that you got. I mean, how significant? There are little things in our lives that we remember. They're not big. But we can remember them.
I've got chills. You saw me tear up. Just thinking about it again. My neighbor, Billy Adams, who played for the Buffalo Bills, Swampscott legend, was my neighbor and my babysitter. When he started to call, not my name, but he goes, I used to babysit for this kid, and I knew it was going to be me. My heart went to like 200 beats a minute. You're in front of all your peers at the time. You know, it was like the Boosters thing. It was all the teams, not like we do it now with just the separate teams. You know, and I always, as a kid growing up in Swampscott, I've said this many times, as a kid growing up in Swampscott, in that era, you wanted to be an athlete. Most of us wanted to be an athlete. You wanted to be a jock, you know. I wasn't a big kid, but I was lucky. I found my niche just by accident. And when Billy Adams and Coach Cochran, I get that Most Improved thing, it was like, oh, my God, I got a trophy from Swampscott High School. It's like, I was hooked. I was hooked. So as a coach now, I know, I hope, you know, it might be meaningful for some of these kids and less meaningful for others, but you hope that the kids get a similar experience. That's all.
Well, WF, thanks so much for your time. As I mentioned to you, I feel like I'm really kind of meeting a legend here, and I really mean that, because all that you've been able to accomplish, I'm certainly remembering probably those 80s, you know, for sure.
The 100,000 is probably the least significant of everything I've done. It's a good number. I'm proud of it, but as I said, it's strictly a byproduct of being a competitive athlete and runner.
WF, thanks for your time. And again, I really enjoyed this. So best of luck.
Thank you so much, Bill. Been a pleasure.
Yeah. WF Newhall, the third here. Oh, one more thing.
As I like to say to many people, because I have a lot of stories, thanks for listening.
There you go. WF Newhall, the third here. Originally from Swampscott, now in Marblehead. I'm Bill Newhall on MSO, newsports.com.